popping, everybody. Hello to a Wednesday with Mark, all the way from Berkeley. Brandon, breezed in from Rochester Hills. Jay from Plymouth. I'm Drew, right here in the basement in Ferndale. It's a Drew and Mike podcast. Yeah. And one unfortunate note, we lose Alan Thicke.
Oh, man, what a bummer.
Good guy.
Yeah.
I knew Alan.
Ooh.
We played golf with Alan in the Dino Ciccarelli golf outing. Remember that?
You know what? That was pre-me.
Was that before you?
I want to say that was right before me. It was 96-ish. Maybe 95, 96-ish.
He called in the next morning, too, to rag us for how drunk we were. Because we were doing the auction afterwards, and we were pretty hammered. We just started saying some of the things we were auctioning nobody's bidding on, and we're just basically trashing them. Like, oh, who would want this anyway? I don't blame you. I wouldn't bid on it. And he was a super nice guy. God, he was about as normal as, I mean, I thought of him as a pretty big star.
Every time he was pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, he's on a big show for 7 years.
Dr. Jason Seaver really helped me grow up.
So you actually watched the show?
Growing Pains? Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, I never watched it.
Oh, everybody loved Growing Pains. There's a Growing Pains movie? That's all I could think of. Every time they showed a clip of Tracy Gold, it was when Larry King goes, there's a Growing Pains movie? Yeah, Larry.
Yeah, it came out last year. He suddenly thought, I'll take the opportunity to promote it. She's like, oh, no, we're way done with that.
It's already on DVD, Larry. Of course, you can't do a eulogy for Alan Thicke without talking about, he wrote all those theme songs.
Yeah, the
Different Strokes and Facts of Life.
Exactly. He wrote some other stuff, too. He was a musician.
Yeah. Yeah.
What renowned. They always reference the theme show, the show themes, whenever they talk about it.
Because everybody knows those two songs. You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both. It sounds like a very simple song, actually.
I never thought those show themes were really worthy of mentioning. I mean, I wouldn't go run around saying, hey, I wrote the show theme for... I mean, even the Tonight Show theme.
Yeah.
They make such a big deal out of how much money Paul Anka made off that. It's like, it's really that great a song.
But, like, I remember the lyrics for Different Strokes and Facts of Life, though.
Well, the lyrics were always what the show was about.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess.
I mean, really, going back to Gilligan's Island.
It does take Different Strokes to move the world.
Of course. That's why the song was so successful. It reminded us.
I forgot DiCaprio. Yeah, that was DiCaprio.
One season. Gig.
Move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some.
A man is born, he's a man of means.
I forgot this part. I feel like this is a different version of the theme song. This is like Alan Thicke.
There are different versions online. There are. I don't think this is it.
This is a totally different
version.
Mike's
not on, Jay.
I feel like Drew listening to the Beatles yesterday. Like, this is the right version.
No, it pisses me off.
Did he steal these lyrics or the beat from Marvin Gaye?
Oh, like his kid did? He's got the beat stealing gene?
Yeah.
Plausible.
This doesn't sound right either.
There are fake themes. I'm telling you, there are fake themes for Gilligan's Island and the Brady Bunch. When you're the Brady Bunch, you'll be appalled. It's like, wait a second. This is so obviously not the theme. Fuck you.
Jay, are you taking it a little bit personal?
Yeah.
It's not your fault.
There's no indication on his end whatsoever. Just
no,
theme song. Who would think there'd be a fake theme song? Who'd have thunk it? Do you know?
Here's a story.
Oh, this was definitely fake.
Vicky, who was transferred into Carrie's Cayman class.
Oh my god, what
they
is this bullshit?
They soon became best friends, always together, forever it would last.
What the hell?
What was that? Jeez. There's even one of the DVDs that put out the 64 favorite show theme songs.
Yeah,
it has fake ones on there, too, because they couldn't get licensing to like 10 of them. So they recut them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They don't even sound the same.
Well, maybe that's what they did to Different Strokes, and that's the version I know.
Possible. Don't know.
That was a great show.
I'm a little distracted right now because I'm looking at the Matthew and Kelly Stafford baby registry.
Oh, it was a very hot topic before the podcast started today.
Did you guys find something we should buy?
No, I was too distracted saying I was deciding what were good choices and what were poor choices.
Jay was suggesting that we send a self-addressed thank you envelope.
Just to get him to sign it?
Yeah, so that it'll be so easy for him to thank us because he's been so... he's really fallen down on the job. I don't know how the other people feel that gave them nice gifts for their engagement and their wedding.
Isn't it a little weird, though, that they have a baby registry when...
I think it's totally ridiculous.
$17 million.
There should be some...
I think it's more for her, just to walk around and zap things.
Well, you know, they probably figure, you know, she's going to have a couple showers, and people are going to get stuff whether they tell them to or not.
That's true.
And so they might as well get shit that they want.
Yeah.
Save themselves a lot of trouble. But couldn't they say, look, no gifts. No gifts because...
Donate to Mitch Albom's charity or whatever.
If you really want to do something, do this.
Yeah.
Because what I think about are the fact that they're bound to have some friends or relatives who probably don't have a lot of money. And they're going to feel like, well, shit, I got no money. This guy makes $25 million. I got my fucking baby shower gift. That sucks.
I got to buy him the 7 a.m. infant warm muffs in Bordeaux.
Clark, it's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
I think that's the gift on the list I had the biggest problem with, because they're basically mittens for whoever is pushing the stroller. It's not really even for the baby.
What?
Right?
How much are they?
I mean, look at this person modeling it. It's just, they're like gloves.
What's it cost?
Designed to give you a sure and comfortable grip on stroller handles during cold weather, these hand muffs feature a thermally efficient synthetic fill for toasty warmth, which, by the way, she's not giving birth to what, the end of March? She's going to be longer on the water.
That's preposterous.
Yeah.
So everything's on there, the baby stroller, everything.
Yeah, they're doing the whole baby carrier that snaps out of the car into the stroller.
And everything's doubled, too, because the twins.
Oh, that's right.
So there's some twin-themed, you know, onesies. Copy, control.
Onesies.
Control C.
Onesies rule, man.
I wouldn't mind a onesie.
Oh, she's getting...
I like tonight.
They make adult ones.
Why don't we... Can I have your credit card? Let's get her the nursing cover.
Fuck the nursing cover. Do not buy her the nursing cover.
It's only $40. They requested one. Two have already been purchased.
$40? Who are the fun governors who don't want to see his wife's tits?
There's two of them.
Let me see this cover.
This model, too. The model's kind of hot. They're not a baby in sight.
What a crock of shit. How could someone... I think the person that came up with this product should be flogged.
There's a one-star review for it.
Let's hear it.
Not easy to use. I regret that I bought this product. I would have been just as well off using a blanket. The opening at the top is not, I guess, sturdy enough to stay open without constantly fixing it. It's difficult to see the baby. I wish I could return it.
What? Why can't you return it? Like anything else.
She probably got boob milk all over it.
Who is the fun governor that came up with that? What a bad idea.
Well, that other person's right, too. She's a blanket.
A blanket's fine.
You should send
That's the one thing you would find about stuff for infants and kids is that they make things specifically for that, which they don't really need to make. Like, you could just use another household
object. Of course.
You should send a Tom Brady fathead for the nursery.
Oh, totally. Or, let's see, who would be a big nemesis of his?
Well, Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah. Anybody sack him a lot?
I think there's been a few people, actually.
They are getting a Mamaru. That's pretty sweet.
What's the most expensive item on the baby registry?
The Mamaru's pretty expensive.
What's the Mamaru?
$270. It's a thing. It's you put the baby in, it goes and just rocks it and moves it all around so you don't have to.
Oh, wow. I want one of those.
Here's something more expensive. The high chair.
What's the high chair?
$300.
$300?
It's a four moms high chair. Four moms is like the technological leader amongst kids. I know.
Whoa.
It's cleverly designed for comfort and convenience. Its soft seat and safety harness keep your child comfy and secure, while the magnetic tray top minimizes messes.
Is this a high chair for two brats?
No, it's just one, but they need two.
Yeah.
You want to buy it?
No. $300.
Oh, they're getting a bumbo seat. Bad idea. It's not good for the kid. I'm serious. I'm not joking.
What is a bumbo seat?
So you put the infant in it so it sits up when it's not able to sit up, which some physicians think is a bad idea because of the organs inside are developing. So the baby gets squished.
Wow. We don't want the little Stafford children to have squished organs, do we?
So stupid that I know. Why do I care? Whatever.
Hey, we're going to talk to Leo Early from the Grandy Ballroom book coming up. Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace.
Here's something for five. Oh, here's something for $4.
Oh, excellent. What is it? What is it?
I'm baby, all ears. Baby bottle nipples.
Baby bottle. Just the nipple?
Just the nipple, yeah. Because you throw those away.
Separate?
Before. Yeah.
How cool. I'm in.
Storage
I'll go
caps.
Halves.
Storage caps, even cheaper. $2.49.
I'll go halves on that.
Just buy one.
Should we splurge and get both? Since
they
want $6.49.
They want three.
Three what?
Of the caps that go on the bottles.
I believe they've actually gone through and decided how
I know.
Many they need of each of these. Greedy.
$2.49.
They have a diaper collector.
And you have to, like a diaper pail?
Yeah, you know those ones where you
Yeah, those are
them.
Stupid.
They are.
That's another thing you don't ever need to buy.
No.
Glad you agree.
They'll use cloth.
Kelly Stafford.
Will not use cloth.
There's a story. I can't believe it's actually a story about them having a registry. But
I know.
Is. Well, she's pretty cute.
She's very cute.
How's her gig going as the cheerleader? Or is that a gig? Or was she just a voter?
I thought she was just a judge.
Right. Okay.
How's she been on Instagram? Has she been berating anybody lately?
I don't know. It's funny how many wives, girlfriends feel the need to defend their man.
It's really childish.
I've always thought it was, ridiculous. And almost like the guy can't control his horse.
Her Instagram's filled with hanky panky.
It is?
Yeah, look at him.
Hanky panky.
What's he doing on there?
I don't know. They were celebrating something.
Hanky panky. Let's
call parties him. With Mrs. Stafford?
It was at the baby shower.
Baby shower.
What?
Should we call him?
Wait, Hank is really... Yeah, we should.
All right. Do we have time to call him right now?
How are we doing for time?
8 minutes.
I think it requires about 8 minutes.
He's homeboys with
me. Gives me time to go upstairs and get my coffee.
Lines,
okay. Let me write this down.
He knows all those dudes.
I know. He's really tight. Originally was tight with Joe Fourier and Sam Martin because they lived by him. Hank's a great dude, too, man.
No, he's good.
Let's see. Hanky panky. I forgot that's not what he's listed at under here.
I got him right.
Oh, you do have him. Okay, call him up. I'll talk to him. She wrote, I love these three beautiful people. I'm grateful for the baby shower they threw for us. Wait, so did he throw it for them too? This is really, I'm really intrigued by this development. When was this posted? This was posted
one day ago.
So she just had it over the weekend.
Yeah.
Huh. He's not working, is he? I haven't seen him on TV. He could be in the Help Me Hank room. His office used to be in the Defenders room. Now it's in the Help Me Hank room.
Hank.
It's ringing, Drew. It's probably going to go to voicemail. I think Hank threw... I think he threw the baby shower.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Uh-huh.
Just to get himself invited.
I reached Hank Winchester. I can't take your call right now. If you'd like, leave a message. I'll call you back as soon as possible. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message.
Don't
when you finish recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Hank, it's Drew and Mark calling from the podcast. We had a pretty important question. Wouldn't call it an emergency. But if you get this and you got a chance to call, maybe, let's see, we're going to be with Leo till probably 10 to 7. Anytime after like 6:50 or 6:55? Give us a holler back if you get this.
Help me, Hank.
Goodbye.
Oh.
That would be pretty brilliant.
Bye-bye.
If he threw the baby shower in order to
be
gain
invited?
Access to Kelly Stafford.
Does anybody really want to be invited that bad to a baby shower?
I don't know. Chicks like it. I guess some do.
I suppose.
You know there's some that go apeshit. Oh, my God, it was the greatest. I had the best time. I had the best time. But I think a lot of girls really could do without that commitment.
Oh, she posted up her invite to the baby shower, too. But doesn't say that he's throwing it.
So you could know what it would look like to be invited to Kelly Stafford's baby shower?
Pom-pom,
how nice.
Pom-poms are pigskin, toe touches are touchdowns. What gender will baby Stafford be? Please join us for a party to see. In honor of Kelly and Matthew, Kelly's favorite pregnancy food will be served, as well as cocktails.
So they're giving up the sex of the babies at the baby shower.
Yeah. Well, I think this is from 5 weeks ago, so this was one down in Georgia, it looks like. Ah, good for them. They're happy.
Yeah, just let them be happy, as they say.
Oh, they're having two girls, too.
Okay. Good for them. So happy. I'm so concerned.
Well,
I'm so interested. I'm so the intrigue was killing me.
Hey, they were at Hank's wedding.
What?
Yeah, 4 weeks ago. There's Hank and Jeff, and then there's Matthew and Kelly. And there's Joe and Sam.
Boy, Hank is just—he's like he's an honorary lion.
Is he gonna? Yeah, he should suit up. Hank's a big dude, man.
Wouldn't that be cool if they secretly put Hank on the roster real quietly, didn't announce it or anything?
Like
they,
a paper Martin.
But they covered
paper Martin. Paper line.
Paper line, yeah. They covered all the league regulations, though. And then they did one of those crazy plays where they only have 10 guys in the huddle, and Hank is right next to the sideline, and he catches the 50-yard pass with no one covering him for the winning touchdown to put him in the playoffs.
Stafford
help me, Hank!
Stafford gets in the huddle. All right, we're going to do Hank, all right? Help me, Hank, on three. Hut.
Or he can get in on a defensive play and get a half sack. And
ooh, yeah, like Rudy.
Yeah.
They carry Hank off on their shoulders. Hank. Hank. Hank.
Hank.
The whole team threw their jerseys in because Hank, they wanted Hank to play.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be awesome.
Hey, speaking of little creatures like these little babies, what about this, I mean, a veritable brouhaha over Hillary Duff's picture of her kissing her four-year-old on the lips.
I know. Isn't this not trolling at its finest?
I think so.
Are people really, really mad about that?
I think so. I mean, she's not French kissing the baby, okay?
No.
There's not tongue.
It's just kissing on the lips at four. Big deal.
But apparently some people have a huge problem with kissing your child on the lips.
Yeah.
It's a little strange.
They call it weird and perverted. Why is it perverted?
You want to kiss me?
It's perverted if you're French kissing your child.
Yeah.
If you're doing a quick peck on the mouth, that's a little different, but I don't think it's a big deal. Do you?
My favorite thing about this story, because Inside Edition covered it, was former TV Superman Dean Cain weighed in. What? What? Somebody had to get comment from
Dean Cain? It had to be because he was nearby. I guarantee you they were at a premiere or something. They're like, where can we get some people to weigh in?
I guess he was
like, well, there's a premiere down the street. And of course, there's like eight people there who have nothing to do with the story, but they're, you know, they're known people.
I mean, if there's one story, I'm sitting around going, oh, God, what does former TV Superman Dean Cain have to think about this?
Well, can you imagine
Scott Peterson lookalike Dean Cain?
Dean Cain, yeah.
They get a phone call. It's like, yeah, Dean Cain here. I really want to weigh in on this, this Hillary Duff thing.
It'd be worth it if Dean Cain's like, I found it totally disgusting, and she disgusts me. It takes the minority route, but of course he supports her.
Crooked Hillary.
No, did anyone weigh in and say, I think it's terrible?
No, just people online. Just, you know.
They had a bunch of pictures of other celebrities who had done the same thing, like Jane Seymour making out with her 17-year-old boy.
Oh, gross. 17.
Kissing the lips. Yeah, she was wearing like a bikini too.
Yeah, that was in the water. I remember those.
It was a little
those
weird.
Were pretty creepy.
That was kind of weird, I gotta say.
Stephanie Seymour.
What did I say?
It's a little different. You said Jane Seymour.
Oh, I thought it was Jane Seymour.
Yeah,
it was Stephanie Seymour. Okay.
Well, that makes it worse though because she's hotter
and younger,
right? Because so because she's hotter and younger, that's why people bring the sexual element into it.
And
was it grabbing her boobs too?
Was David Beckham?
Well, Victoria. That was earlier this year, guys.
Victoria's making out with her kid.
Same story, yeah.
Their kid, by the 11-year-old, has a Christmas song release. The Beckham's 11-year-old kid.
What?
Put a Christmas song out. Yeah.
Why?
It's like, because he's so musical, and it's such a great song.
They
couldn't
God.
Keep it to themselves.
I gotta find. Can we play a little bit of it real quick? Let's see.
It's probably like Maddie B.
I think he covered Frosty the Pervert,
actually. Is it really good?
No, it sucks. And everyone acts like it's
you
really
said
good.
It's
a Beckham kid. Just like Google Beckham Brat puts out a Christmas song.
This should be a J. My up.
Stroke of my lick of my suck of my cock.
Yeah.
It's the first time for you. So here's what you do. Unzip me and strip me and show me you care. Don't go ripping out my pubic hair. Reach for my, grab for my, pull at my cock. You can do it with ease. Just get on your knees. Start licking and slurping. My dick will get firm. Soon you'll be tasting.
Oh, yeah, I have to edit that part out.
Firm, do it right now and don't bite now. Drag your tongue.
I knew there was something
my meat.
Strange coming when he said, soon you'll be getting firm. I'm like, okay, what's that rhyme?
Here's the best part.
Dick. You should know a blowjob can't be beat. Faster now, deeper now, into your throat. The secret is not to choke. Take my shaft by its base. Stuff the whole thing in your face. That's how you suck on my cock.
Big ending.
Musical interlude leaves.
Big ending.
Oh, wow.
Stop it.
Which Beckham kid
was it? 11-year-old. That's all I know.
Oh, man. That wasn't it?
No, that was it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What are you looking for, Brandon?
I thought... He's got a couple others he did, too.
He did?
Well, Frosty the Pervert was the one I mentioned
Cruz.
Earlier.
Oh, that.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
that...
it is Cruz. It's C-R-U-Z.
Let's see.
Cruz. Beckham.
I think
this is it. I'm pretty sure this is it.
Oh, he's a cute little kid.
He sounds a lot older.
Yeah, a little bit. I think he wrote this with his friends.
Yeah, they're having a slumber party.
My neighbor's home.
His voice has changed already.
And I'm listening. My dick is hard. Its head is glistening. A beautiful sight. I squeeze it real tight. I love to choke my chicken with my hand.
Yeah.
My balls are blue.
Like
my cock is smoking.
That's Cruz.
I grab my rod.
Cruz.
And start a stroking. It's a sight to behold when shooting my load. I love to choke my chicken with my hand.
He's European. Maybe it just doesn't translate.
People like to say that I'm a loner.
Oh, what's going to rhyme with loner?
I am very sick.
What's going to rhyme with sick?
Because all I do is sit and stroke my boner. But I wouldn't if my tongue could reach my dick. With each yank, I perspire. I shoot my load ever higher.
What?
I won't even mind if I end up blind. I love to choke my chicken with my hand.
Yeah. Do you know he actually has songs on here that we've never listened to?
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Because I think they're actually, like, bad.
They're bad even in that context.
Yeah, they're not even funny bad.
Compared to those, they're bad. We got some music for Mr. Leo Early.
Yeah, I do. Another Rated X one.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Frightening. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ballroom Blitz.
Leo Early.
Leo. Hello, Leo. Hey, it's Drew and Mark calling from the Drew and Mike podcast. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. Enjoyed the book?
Oh, great. Thanks.
We saw the documentary on the Grandy Ballroom just a few years ago, and I knew there had to be a book out there or coming. And, you know, I've heard so much about the Grandy Ballroom over the years, but I got to tell you, looking at the list of bands that played there, I was really just blown away. The Who, the Yardbirds, Jeff Beck Group, Cream, the Kinks. I mean, honest to God, that was, it's incredible how much they packed into just a few years there.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Just an amazing, amazing pool of talent that came through town.
Was the, I get the feeling that the Who was probably the biggest deal of all because they debuted Tommy, first time for a U.S. audience, at the Grandy Ballroom.
Sure. But then again, let's not forget Cream.
Sure. Mm. Cream is huge.
I think Cream probably had better success or bigger success earlier on, you know. But then, you know, the Who kind of matched them a couple years later by 1969 when that occurred.
And I love Tommy. I love that the Cream and the MC5 had sort of a little rivalry because the MC5 was considered their home court. And Cream, I guess, kind of pissed them off one night by setting up the big drum set right in the middle of the stage and kind of, hey, don't mess with the drum set. So the MC5 had to work around this drum set. So they just said, well, we're just going to blow these guys off the stage.
Yeah, well, that's part due to the, you know, as I mentioned in the book, there's a bit of a fee disparity, you know, between what the MC5 made and what Cream was getting. So I think they were a bit upset by that as well. But they paid them back.
And maybe the coolest thing that happened with Cream, well, the shows I'm sure were extremely cool, but when Cream came back and they were so much bigger and they played Olympia, you had the John Mayall and the Blues Breakers at the Grandy, and Eric Clapton comes over and jumps on stage with them when probably people were least expecting it. Or maybe they were expecting it.
Yeah, that's one of those, you know, perhaps the ultimate sit-in, you know, at the Grandy. And there were lots of those, you know. Everybody from Bob Seger. Now, Bob Seger never, you know, officially was booked there, but he would sit in occasionally.
Bob was not big enough at that time?
He would have been, and I've never been able to get a straight answer from, you know, Russ Gibb or Punch Andrews why he was never officially booked, you know. I think Punch was really controlling of him and preferred he played at, you know, other venues like the Palladium or Hideouts and things like that, you know. And for some reason, he was just, I've never been able to document it. No one's ever told me that he officially was booked to ever play there.
That's strange. Well, going back to Cream, I love a little story about, I guess it was Jimmy McCarty who recorded the Cream show with permission, and a lot of people have heard this tape, in exchange for some pick-me-ups.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think pharmaceuticals flowed freely. Pretty common, you know, for bands to indulge in those.
I didn't know that. It's strange. I thought they just were sober all the time.
So yeah, that was. It's really great that you know, Jimmy was able to do that because it's not only a great performance, but if you've ever heard it, you can really hear the room.
And where's the tape? Where is it?
Well, from what I understand, he lost control of it years ago.
Oh,
And it's kind of made the bootlegging circles to the point where people have tweaked it and kind of remastered it, so to speak, and try to improve on the sound quality. So, but if you get a chance to get a hold of it, I highly recommend it.
So, what was it that killed it off? I mean, the club pretty much stopped in what, 71, and was used for charity events. Like, what was it that killed it off? Just competition?
Not competition per se. It was, you know, the money started to come into it, right? So, people, you know, these acts, you know, started to realize, you know, that the market was growing and they could charge more. So they started to squeeze all these independent promoters who were having a hard enough time. So they had to go into larger and ever larger rooms, right? So by 72, you know, that's when, you know, rooms like, basically by 69, you know, they brought in the East Town, which is a larger theater. Mm. By 72, you got the Michigan Theater, which is huge, and nearly 5,000 seats, to, you know, meet the guarantees that a lot of these bands were demanding. So the industry itself kind of grew to a point where those smaller psychedelic bombs, I could like to term them, kind of got squeezed out, and they were outgrown.
So its heyday was really about 4 years, 5 years long.
You know, the real peak periods were 66, 67, 68, and 69 to some degree. But, you know, Russ Gibb, who had really kicked that off, was largely out of the picture by late 69. And so, you know, the actual owner of the bomb, Gabe Glantz, and his son Steve, and other promoters continued to do shows there through, kind of really, really petered out with a couple remaining shows that were independent promoters in 73, even. Just slowly, slowly faded out.
Leo, having moved here in late 91, I've heard Russ Gibbs' name so many times related to so many things. You know, the Paul McCartney is dead story, which he really debuted on KNR-FM, I guess, and sort of spurred that thing along, or at least gave out the clues and made it easy for people to sort of follow along with that thing, which there was certainly something to that. I don't know if they planned that from day one or if they just sort of played with the public's minds or what was happening, but it was certainly a fun kind of thing to discover these little clues about Paul McCartney, whether he was dead or alive. Of course he was alive. We know nothing ever happened to Paul McCartney. But nonetheless, Russ was certainly the guy that kicked that thing off. He had the Grandy Ballroom success. He bought the rights for cable TV for the city of Dearborn, I guess, for $5,000. Is this guy a super? Is he ridiculously wealthy? It seems like he must be.
Well, he would tell you that he's very, very lucky, a hard worker that was in the right place at the right time and was very lucky and knew enough to take chances and capitalize on chances that came his way, because luck is really preparation meets opportunity, right?
Sure.
And that's what happened to him, really. And he'll also tell you he was not solely responsible, but he had a lot of great partners and great people working for and with him.
Must have been a good, darn good promoter, though. I mean, just the fact that he was able to get all these agencies that handle these huge bands for this very short period of time. Did he do much concert promotion after the Grandy Ballroom? I know there was the Goose Lake thing and a few other odds and ends at that period, but did he do much in the 80s, 90s, or after this period?
Well, not so much. I mean, in the 70s, early 70s, he got into some of the larger venues doing stuff in Toronto and as far afield as Cincinnati and Chicago, where he would do some larger shows. But the late 70s, he kind of got out of it until the late 70s, early 80s, he got into a bit of the punk movement,
Okay.
So he picked up on some of the punk and new wave and operated a venue on Michigan Avenue called the Greystone, which was kind of a club. It was a punk club, basically, is what it was.
Love that music. I love that music. I just, it's funny, listening to the radio, even since I've been here, that period of new wave and punk from 77 to, I mean, I really say 76, I suppose, to 84 in terms of new wave, which had some carry on. You don't hear that music on radio in Detroit. People don't really play that.
Russ Gibbs also got involved in, through his cable connections in Dearborn with a locally produced kind of like an MTV video show called Back Porch Video.
Okay.
Where he, he worked at, taught at Dearborn High for years doing media production. He had his students as the staff for Back Porch Video, and through his record company connections, he got all these, the latest video promos, and they would show them on cable TV. There was a whole crop of kids that actually came through that program.
Hey, go on.
Tom Wright, who was one of the managers at Grandy Ballroom and his connection to The Who, has a book out. Well, it's no longer in print if you can find it. It's called Roadwork. It goes into great detail about his time with The Who and his time managing the Grandy. But it also goes into detail about Russ in the late 70s, early 80s, getting involved in that new wave scene with a number of young local bands that he managed and promoted. So he kept his fingers in it just a little bit, but largely the big concert stuff, he was out of it by the early 70s.
Going back to the Grandy, one of the coolest things about the Grandy Ballroom are the poster art, which Gary Grimshaw, if you look at, there are a couple books out there with the great rock and roll posters, the ones that are the most valued, and you'll find Gary Grimshaw all over those books, and some of those original posters are worth a lot of money. And the artwork from the Grandy Ballroom posters is clearly some of the best rock and roll art that came out of that period, and I don't know if you have some of those original posters or if Russ Gibbs does, but it seems like you can make some money off of those.
Oh, You know, I wish I had some of those original ones. You know, I have a few of the reprints. And knowing Gary, you know, I was fortunate enough to get some of those second printings signed by him. But you know, Gary, you know, he was the leading local proponent for that type of art. And as I mentioned in the book, he was always a very creative guy and a brilliant artist as a young man before he entered the Navy. And being in port in San Francisco in the Navy, he had opportunity to go shore leave, and that's where he got exposed to the Avalon Bottle Room, Winterland, and Bill Graham's Fillmore Auditorium.
Yeah, I've seen some of that.
The whole team.
I've seen some of those too, and again, some of the best artwork of the period, no question about it. The Grandy Ballroom, and Leo Early is the author of the book. Excuse me. And we're talking to Leo about the many great things that happened there in this brief period of time, which was just so incredible. And the list of bands is in the book, which I just found so hard to believe. Can you tell us anything about Led Zeppelin's performance there? I pretty much read the whole book, and I don't think I saw anything about the Zeppelin performance in there.
Didn't go into great detail. You know, the 69 performance as Led Zeppelin.
69.
I believe they were booked through New York, through Premiere. And, you know, it's just another example of, a new band looking for that Midwest stopover, right? And they got booked into the Grandy. And it was, as I understand, it was very lightly attended.
Lightly attended?
Wow.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I'm sure there's...
Yeah, less than 100 people. And I believe they were there for two nights. Don't quote me. I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I believe it was two nights. The first night was lightly attended, and the next night word got around, and it was much better attendance the second night.
Probably 100,000 people that pretend they were there.
Tom,
of course.
I don't mean to promote another book, but it's a very, very worthy book if you find it. Tom Wright's Roadwork, where Tom was there, and it's a first-hand account of Led Zeppelin at the Green. Huh. And he was really floored.
You know, the
how good they sounded.
The Kinks did not play much of America, and I think they had problems with unions, or there was some issue with the Kinks in America in the mid-60s, but they did perform at the Grandy, and that's another one I was curious about. Was that a lightly attended show as well, or were the Kinks getting over at that time?
I have nothing in my records on the Kinks at the Grandy, and I don't know why that is.
Anybody directly,
and I have no artifacts, related to it, or newspaper articles confirming the Kinks.
One of the biggest acts to probably explode out of there is Iggy and the Stooges, and, total spectacle, total performer. Is there one performance he did that really stood out above the other ones?
The Stooges?
Yeah, with Iggy. Is there something he did at the Grandy that was just so infamous?
There's one that didn't make the book that I thought was kind of cool. I mean, it was like a really crazy concert, but it was a story that was told to me by a guy named Rick Lockhart that's mentioned in the book, and he was kind of Man Friday to Gabe Glantz, who was co-owner, mm-hmm. the owner of record for the Grandy. And it was the night that we landed on the moon. The U.S. landed on the moon.
No kidding.
Okay, so Stooges are playing. And Gabe Glantz used to call, and he was a young kid. He was, he was barely like 16 years old, and an emancipated youth that Gabe Glantz more or less had adopted. Like something out of Oliver. And he would actually live at the Grandy from time to time.
No way.
And run the place and sweep up. So Whoa. He's sitting in the office in between sets, and the Stooges are about to go on, and Gabe Glantz calls him. And Gabe Glantz, his nickname for Rick Lockhart was Sonny Boy. So. And Gabe is watching, Neil Armstrong, dropping down the ladder on the moon. And he calls Rick and he says, "Sonny boy, who's on?" And Rick says, it's Iggy. Iggy's on tonight. He goes, "Sonny boy, we just landed on the moon. Go tell Iggy to tell everybody."
tell Iggy that Iggy broke the news.
So, you know, Rick runs up to the side of the stage, and the band's warming up, getting ready to kick off the set. And he goes, you know, Jim, you know. And he wanders over, and he goes, Gage just called. We just landed on the moon. Iggy, you know, jumps on the mic and goes, hey, everybody, we just landed on the fucking moon. And they kick into 1969.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. Well,
that's my favorite story. And again, you know, I was too young to ever have gone, but I thought that was kind of a neat one.
I love the story about the riots. Tim Buckley's playing there, and they head up on the roof just to kind of get the breeze and cool off after the performance. And they can see the fires burning not too far from the Grandy Ballroom. And they end up eventually leaving, of course, and Russ had a picnic at the Kensington Park the next day. And because he's got this hot stereo in his 65 Thunderbird, complete with 8-track recorder, 8-track player, they're so busy cranking tunes that they don't really know the riot is still going on, has gotten completely out of hand, which is amazing. I mean, you think about today, of course you'd know. I mean, a bunch of people would have their phones and they'd know
for
sure.
Yeah, your phone would ring. Right?
Yeah. So anyway, they take off to go down to the Grandy, and they realize what's going on. And in certain neighborhoods, there's a black guy in the car. He drives, and the white guy's kind of ducked down while he's getting through those neighborhoods. And then when he gets to the whiter neighborhoods, the black guy in the car ducks down, and one of the white guys drives. Do I have that right?
They started off in Dearborn, so they started off with, you know, Russ driving. And then by the time they get to the city limits, and they swap, you know, places to drive to the Grandy. Carter Collins, he had a real interesting number of interviews with Carter Collins, who played with Tim Buckley for years, as well as other people like Stevie Wonder and Tower of Power, et cetera, et cetera. But Carter, I actually got him on a phone interview with Russ Gibb. And I had them hash out the details because, you know, Russ told me that was a very famous story Russ tells that story all the time. It's actually it's in the film. It's in Tony D'Annunzio's Louder Than Love film. And, you know, Carter had a slightly different story. So we kind of got on the phone and kind of hashed out kind of details. Okay, well, it was more like this. Because over time, you know, memories change and the stories get but it was more or less accurate, Russ's story.
Okay. some of the later promotions I thought were so interesting. Russ got involved with the Goose Lake thing. And you know, I've seen some video from Goose Lake, and that was this giant venue that had been built specifically for this concert, and hopefully many more after that, by a Southfield construction guy. His name was Richard Songer?
Yeah, Richard Songer. Right?
Richard Songer, yeah. And, you know, I don't know who's still around from all that period, but, you know, they had these speaker towers, and they had the rotating stage, and it sounded like it was a beautiful venue, but there was so much bitching about drug use at Goose Lake that they shut the thing down. I think the legislature said no more bullshit rock concerts at this venue, which was completely built, correct?
That's right. I mean, Songer and Russ, you know, hoped that would take off as more of a permanent venue. You know, this is, again, years before, you know, a lot of the larger, you know, they call them sheds, like, you know, Pine Knob.
Sure.
Right? I'm sorry, DTE Energy Theater.
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, my God. That's terrible.
But that's what they had envisioned, more kind of like a music, entertainment, amusement kind of park kind of thing. But they really caught a lot of heat, but they had some great legal representation. And, you know, it kind of came down to, you know, I can't quote the cases exactly. I'm sure if you wanted to look up the cases, and cite the cases, that, you know, they had kind of had a agreement with the state police about, entering the grounds.
Right.
Versus not entering the grounds, right? And, again, I didn't go to Goose Lake, but, you know, the story was when people were leaving, they had 50-gallon drums at the exits. And people were just depositing baggies and all kinds of illicit substances in these 50-gallon barrels because, you know, don't leave with your stuff because the state police are, you know, they're waiting down the road for you, right? So people are getting pulled over left and right, and hopefully you didn't have anything on you.
Well,
and but that was the agreement that they had, and when it kind of came down to the courts, and they had these cases against them. It's like, well, you know, put the state police on the stand, and well, did you have an agreement, you know, not to enter the property? And so, I mean, you know, and in many ways, the state police kind of misrepresented themselves,
bastards,
you know, and never should have brought them up on charges, but they got off in the end. End up in jail.
Still amazing that, you know, this guy builds this unique venue with the rotating stage and the I know the speaker towers. I think they said they had steel speaker towers, which sounded like they were really effective. I mean, people enjoyed that show. By all accounts, it was a great show with Seeger and the MC5, Stooges, Faces were there, James Gang with Joe Walsh, John Sebastian, 10 Years After, Chicago, when Chicago was kind of cool. And, you know, it looked like, wow, we really got something going here. And then they shut this down. I don't know what happened to the venue. Do you know what they did with that after? I mean, they couldn't have rock concerts there, so what did they do with it?
I understood that the Songer held on to the property for years. And I think the support towers for the speakers are still there if you go out.
Really?
And see the property. It's some park now, I guess. But, you know, those, being that Songer was into building freeways and freeway bridges, I mean, like, big-time construction. He had access to a lot of that steel and concrete, and they actually, in the property, formed a earthen amphitheater, kind of a bowl, because ideally you don't want flat space. You want some sort of an elevated floor like a movie theater, right? So the folks in the back can see better, and that's effectively what they did. So they, not only did they do major earth moving, but they brought in all that concrete and, you know, there was obviously a lake there for swimming, and you know, it was better run than Woodstock. Much, and it actually made money.
What was the attendance for Goose Lake? Was it? I mean, did it reach a couple hundred thousand, or was it smaller than that?
I couldn't quote you exactly, and wouldn't want to hazard a number. But you're talking six figures, you know,
over 100 for sure.
Two or three. Don't quote me exactly.
Oh my God.
You said the stands for the speakers are still out there. When was the last time you were at the Grandy Ballroom, and what shape is that building in today?
If you go to thegrandyballroom.com, you'll see the most recent exposition inspection.
Doesn't look like it's ready for a show.
Not exactly.
Too bad.
But being that over the years, you know, I've maintained contact with the current owners, and actually did some work to try to get it on the National Register of Historic Places. And for years, the current owners didn't have the funds to really do anything with it apart from secure it. But the first week of October, and this is just prior to the Grandy 50th concert that was held in Dearborn, we went through the Grandy with the owner's architects, structural engineers. We had a team of students from the Wayne State University archaeology department, the urban archaeology program, as well as the Detroit Sound Conservancy, which is another group that I'm involved in.
Sounds like too many cooks.
I'm sorry?
I said, sounds like too many cooks. I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, but all very well-intentioned, very smart.
Of course.
People. That we took through, and I think we had a team of about 20 people. So what's being done now is, you know, the architect, I just got a report from the architect, and the engineers are putting together a report, and we're going to get some deliverables and some information back from Wayne State, because the owners want to know, is this in any way a viable building coming forward? And that's changed over the years, because they really didn't see the historical significance of it. But you know, largely thanks to Tony Nunzio's film, the book being out, and this huge rush of interest around the Grandy 50th anniversary, they thought, well, yeah, maybe it makes sense to say this as a
come on, get with it.
Historic building.
Leo, how's the book doing? Have you sold a lot of copies?
It's doing really well.
Good.
You know, I talked to the publisher the other day, and you know, regional history books commonly don't sell a ton of copies. You know, I'm not in the Stephen King territory, but since it's official publication date, when the publisher is Arcadia with their sub brand History Press, and being on History Press, those regional books, their first printing, they usually buy roughly enough to carry them for a year. So in 2 months, I sold what the average regional title sells in a year. So, you know, six times as much as the average, which is a bad.
Well, it's an exciting read. Anybody who loves rock and roll and loves the Michigan rock history would certainly want to read about the Grandy Ballroom. I've heard so much about it over the years, and I saw Tony D'Annunzio's. Mark, you saw it too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was great. It was really good. It was amazing too how many of those guys wanted to talk about it. I thought that was so cool that it would seem like it was so easy to get an Alice Cooper to sit down to talk about the Grandy Ballroom. I mean, it was clearly, you know, there's a lot of love there. And hopefully it was the same way with the book. It sounded like you got pretty much in touch with most of the people that you wanted to talk to.
Right. And going back, you know, as far as I could, you know, I was amazed that some of the folks were still alive, going back even prior to the rock era.
Right.
Know, which was just a real pleasure to speak with some of those folks as well.
Well, good luck with the book, The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace, Leo Early. And if you go on Amazon, I'm sure you can find it. I did try a couple bookstores, and nope. Not on the shelves there, unfortunately, but easy to find online, and I'm sure you'll do great with it. Glad to hear it's doing well.
Thanks, guys. It's a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Leo. Have a good one.
Have a good night.
You too.
All
right.
Bye-bye.
Rock out with Sweet. That's sweet, isn't it, Jay? Yeah. I used to love this song.
Did you like the remake for Wayne's World? Was it Tia Carrere? Did she actually do it herself? Yeah.
I don't think I liked it as much as I like this.
No.
I thought this sounded like Wings, actually.
Huh.
Does it sound like Wings? I could totally see McCartney doing this song in the early 70s.
Did you hear the call waiting peeping over?
Yeah, who was that?
Hanky Panky.
Shoot.
He wrote, then he texted me and said, just try calling you guys back. Hit me up if you're free.
Yeah, let's do it.
Call him back?
Should we wait a few minutes or? We can call him now. Yeah, why not? Why not? I just saw Hanky Panky doing a story about people stealing packages.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Hank.
Help me, Hank.
Help me, Hank.
Help me, Hank.
He was helping once again.
He loves helping people.
And, you know, the best advice I saw in that story.
What kind of dick steals packages off of porch?
I know. A lot of assholes.
I know.
There are plenty of them out
everywhere.
There. Well, there's people are getting nice shit. You know, they're buying nice presents for their family and friends.
Did you see the story of the guy that put a bunch of shit in a box and put it on his porch, and then it got stolen? Like, he actually put his dog shit in a box. Got stolen.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know, is it worth the crime, really? Most people, don't they have cameras on their porch?
Yeah, a lot of people. I've seen a number of stories where they had video of the person running up and picking it up and running away.
He's awaiting our call.
Oh, shoot. I should have mentioned Winchester Cathedral.
What's
up? Damn it.
Winchester Cathedral. We didn't have your song ready, so I had to sing it, Hank.
You got to improvise now, huh?
I know. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. I was just mentioning I saw your story in the 5 o'clock on people stealing packages.
Oh, yeah.
There you are, going helping people again, Hank.
Hey, man, somebody's got to do it, right?
How do you like the Help Me, Hank world? Because, you know, you were covering a lot of... you had a real variety of stories, because the Becerra story was something you were on for a long, long time. That was really fascinating stuff. But the Help Me world is really got to be extremely satisfying, because you are able to cut through a lot of bullshit for for people who really need help, and that's got to be extremely satisfying. But at the same time, I'm sure you're just overwhelmed with people that want help.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible how many emails and calls we get. But for me, being in this lane right now is a lot better. Just, you know, the street reporters in Detroit, I give it up to them. I mean, I'd done it for many, many, many years. But once you're able to kind of flip it around and do something that's a little bit more impactful rather than just standing out there for like a minute or so, it's pretty cool.
And it's so labeled to you, too, because I've even seen Help Me Hank stories where you're not even in the building that day.
Wow, God.
Like at Channel 4, Karen will do something. And we have a Help Me Hank recall. And the Hank's like nowhere to be seen. Although I was watching 4 at 4 the other day, and they, you know, the newsroom right next door to the studio where they have Devin or Kim or whatever. I saw you strolling behind there like with not a care in the world while they were doing
it. It was like all leisure with like a drink in my hand.
Yeah. Like, and it was totally distracting because I just went, Hank! And pointed at it at the TV. It's like no wherewithal when they're recording in that building.
Well, they want to look like a they want to look like a busy
newsroom.
It's been
really good. This school project we're working on has been really cool. So it's great to be able to spend a little bit more time on stuff, you know.
Is that the Thurgood Marshall thing school?
Yeah, it's been awesome. It's been really, really cool.
Yeah.
So
what is the most this is really why we call, but what is the story where you felt like you helped somebody the most, somebody who was the most frustrated and maybe it was a big loss or something you were able to cut through and get them some help on?
I mean, we have battles all the time with DTE and Comcast. I mean, there was this one guy that just sticks out in my head because we've all kind of been there where he had a Dish Network came out to put a dish on his roof, but the installer, it was like clearly week one on the job. He'd basically taken this guy's vinyl sided home, and it looked like it had been shot up in a drive-by. I mean, just had wires and shit going everywhere. And then here's the bullshit part of it. They promised him $8,000 to do a complete repair, and then the day before it was supposed to happen, they changed their mind.
What?
They're like, oh, sorry, we need another estimate from A, B, and C, and then we called them like a week later, and they're like, oh, no, we're going to stick to that original plan. We like that $8,000 plan. God, man, people suck, you know?
Yeah, it is. Well, until they're hit with somebody who's got a little power, they'll jack people around, and a lot of people will put up with it. They'll say, oh, what am I going to do? So,
help me, Hank.
Yeah. There you go.
That's the beauty of it. Yeah, I used to talk to Bill Spencer a lot, and Bill used to really, he was intense. I'm sure you remember Bill.
Yeah.
Your competitor.
He worked for our station that our station group owns in Houston. So I'm still kind of in the Bill Spencer world, if you will.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he used to. Yeah. He did so many stories like that, and I got the feeling at times he was a bit overwhelmed because there were so many people he wanted to help, and many that he did, but it was just a never ending. I mean, you'll never be short of stories, Hank. You know that.
Never. And unfortunately, the need is huge in our community. So do what we can. You know.
Sure, but we are calling about something entirely different because Mark, you want to explain what we may have discovered?
Well,
we have bumbled into.
I guess one of the bigger stories of the day today is the Matthew and Kelly baby registry. So we went to Kelly Stafford's Instagram, and the most recent picture is a baby shower that you were at.
Yes.
Did you throw
how
the baby?
How is their registry?
Well, you click on one thing, you click on another, and then there's Hank once again just popping up.
And we've always
found out that they were at your wedding.
They were at our wedding. Yes.
Were they invited or did
Ooh.
They crash?
No, they were. Yeah, they were invited. Y'all should have crashed. It was a fun wedding.
I got to see the guest list for this wedding. Matt Stafford and Kelly Stafford at the wedding. Who else was at this wedding, Hank?
Who sang?
People or
who sang?
Was the governor there? I mean,
drop the bomb. Drop the bomb. Who sang?
Martha Reeves sang. Yeah.
Martha Reeves.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I knew you were friends with Fourier and Sam Martin. I did not know you were this tight with Matthew Stafford.
Matthew and Kelly are good friends. Yeah, Fourier was my ring bearer.
Yeah, ring bearer. Nothing like a 6'7" ring bearer.
He was my legit ring bearer because when gay marriage became legal, he sent a tweet out saying like, "Gay marriage is legal. I'm so happy. I can't wait for one day I'll be Hank Winchester's ring bearer." He got so much hate. Like he got
hate?
Like, "Oh, gay lover, you and Winchester are boyfriends." Like he just in his very non-temperamental way, kind of fired back at everybody. So I said to him, I said, listen, when we do get married one day, you're going to be the ring bearer. So we decided that we were getting married, and I'm like, listen, it's happening. And he's like, all right, just give me a date. I'll be there. So he flew in from L.A., and it was great.
Oh, that's awesome. Funny.
What's Joe doing now?
He just moved to New York, and I think he's going to kind of give the whole TV thing a go. So,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Trying to break into that side of it. But, you know, the guy's got a lot of personality, and he clearly, you know, has an understanding of the game. So, you know, I think he'd be good for it.
Did he call you up and go, help me, Hank, I want to get in TV?
That's exactly how it went, yeah.
I suspect it was something like that. You know,
anything good on the registry? Or
lots of stuff. I was critical of. Some of it was okay.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a couple items for $2.49.
We're thinking of buying it.
Yeah, we purchased items for Matthew before. Actually, the wedding registry.
And he never gave us a thank you, Hank.
Yeah, we thought it was a good way to get correspondence going with Matt Stafford, but it didn't work out too well.
Can you carry the message to him?
He's heard it before. We're pretty aware of that. I think he's pretty tired of hearing about it. Actually, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah.
I would say, I mean, he's just a great guy, and I think anybody that really knows him, like, you know, first of all, he's having an incredible year.
Yeah, he is.
But I mean, they're just very humble, down to earth, cool people, you know. So
no, I'm happy for him. I wasn't sure, you know, where he was going as a quarterback. Is he going to be an elite quarterback, or is he going to just be in the middle all the time? And he really has made the move to the upper echelon, I think, this year. And this comeback business, he's got nerves of steel, no doubt. I mean, the guy has ice water in his veins, all the cliches. He is, when the game is on the line, not many people I'd rather have back there than him.
I will say we hear a lot of things about certain, you know, athletes in this city. There's one big athlete we hear not so positive things about. Everything we hear about Matthew, though, off the record, tends to be very positive.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a really good guy. I mean, he's just a really good guy, and you know, he's done a lot with Mitch album for the
We know.
Center. I was talking about Matthew.
You didn't have to bring Mitch into it. Are you going to be the ring bearer at their gay marriage when he breaks up with Kelly?
Yeah, trust me, that's not going to happen. Okay? First of all, there's no breaking up with Kelly, and if it does, it's not going to be for a gay wedding.
I don't know. He's pretty tight with Mitch.
No, calm down. Although that was probably their first gay wedding, now that I'm thinking about it. Probably was for a few of them, yeah.
Wait, so, for your guests?
Yeah, I'm guessing, right? I mean,
wait, was Mitch at your wedding too?
No, he was not.
Okay.
Oh, good.
I'd really be hurt if that was the case.
Mitch, I like Mitch, but Mitch was not at my wedding.
I got to go back to Fourier for a minute just to break the tension here. Fourier was so good his rookie year. He caught, was it 8 touchdown passes? Mm-hmm. I cannot get over that he's out of football already. Was it injuries?
Yeah, there were injuries. He had problems with his ankle, and you know, it's just I'll tell you, it's as you guys know. I mean, you follow this game, but boy, that is just one crazy business.
I'll tell you what,
it's just it's wild. So, but yeah, so I think he's kind of shifting now to the point where he's trying to think of the next opportunity that is non-football related. But you're right. I mean, he was a huge huge presence in the red zone, and I thought, you know, somebody else was going to kind of grab him for a while, but didn't work out that way. So,
I thought for sure. I mean, I know his second year wasn't so great, and then things fell out. I was shocked the Lions let him go. It just seemed like, you know, 1 year removed from a good year like that. But, yeah, it's an ugly, ugly business. And, you know, one day it's all good. Next day, not so good.
TV seems perfect for him, too. He's kind of a ham.
You know, right.
Yeah, I mean, in a good way. That's a compliment.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, no, he's a huge personality and clearly has insider knowledge. So, I mean, I'm sure it will all, you know, hopefully work itself out. Yeah.
Boy, the New York market, that's a pretty tough market to bust into, though. Did you maybe suggest he might try a middle market or a small, large market first?
Well, I think there's beyond like the, you know, how we would think of kind of a local affiliate, if you will, or like a national affiliate. I think there's a lot of just different opportunities. Like, I think he did some stuff for Barstool or Vice TV or like all, you know, if all those things, you have to hit a coast for all those little kind of side things. So,
oh, okay.
So I think one of those will pop for him pretty soon. Yeah.
Cool.
I hope.
Yeah.
So what's your next story, Hank?
God, man, what am I doing? I'm what am I doing tomorrow?
Oh, who are you helping?
This really cool. We got this. This program that we do need some help with. We're just kind of throwing it out there and seeing if people will help. But there's this group of warming centers in Macomb County that kind of open their doors starting all next week. But the deal is that when you get in there, you have to sleep on the floor. So they're just putting a kind of an appeal out for yoga mats. I know everybody sleeps on the floor. There's no cots. There's nothing. So we're just going to kind of put all their information out there tomorrow. And if people want to make a financial donation or buy a yoga mat, we'll put it all out there for everybody. But we don't want people sleeping on the floor. You know?
No.
Macomb County can do better than that. I believe in the people of Macomb County. Come on.
No, no question. And I bet you'll get a great response. So,
yeah.
Once again, help me, Hank.
That's a good part of it.
There we go.
Yep.
Cool, Hank. Well, we just want to find out. So you did not host the baby shower, but you were there.
I gave the baby shower.
You did host it. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Jeff and I and Sam Martin and his girlfriend and Prater and his wife.
Wow. How active a role did you play, Hank? Were you just on the invitation, but you didn't really do that much, or did you do a lot?
No. This is Hank we're talking.
Yeah.
Gay man who just planned a gay wedding. You guys want to know what's really funny?
You're going to start a party planning business.
So, I know, but you know so much about football. You defy all gay stereotypes.
No. Yeah, I enjoy the football very much. So this is funny, though. My laptop yesterday just completely melted down. And I was talking to Jeff about it. I'm like, God, my laptop just exploded. I don't know what's wrong with it. He goes, I'll tell you what's wrong. For 3 months, you were Googling fall gay wedding. And then you started Googling baby shower. He's like, the computer was like, bro, push it up a little bit. It just had enough.
Oh, man.
Take it anymore.
Oh, that's great.
That's funny.
Yes, it was a lovely night. They were very appreciative. Yeah.
Well, we've been waiting for microphone number 4 to get hooked up here, and as soon as we do, Hank, we'll get you on the podcast.
I'll be there anytime, guys. Let me know.
Okay, Hank.
All right.
As always, sure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Hank.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
He's great.
Hank Winchester.
I had no idea he was that tight with Matt and Kelly Stafford. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You remember Fourier's injury, right?
From tripping over the dog?
He tripped over because his dog had to go pee-pee. And,
that was for real?
That was his excuse. No one ever believed
it. I just assumed it was bullshit.
Well, the rumor was he was doing something that was in his contract that you're not supposed to do. Like other activities, and that's where...
Like playing pickup basketball or something?
Yeah, or volleyball or something like that.
Okay.
But, you know, that was never proven.
But man, he exploded though with all those dances and.
Yeah, no.
He was all over.
I'm trying to remember. He never blocked Drew. Like I think that was the problem. He wasn't big enough to block.
Right.
He wasn't fast enough to be a receiver.
Okay, when you come out,
he added a lot of value in the red zone.
Absolutely. When you come out of nowhere though as a free agent and catch 8 touchdown passes your rookie year, I figure that gives you 3-4 years in the league right there.
Yeah. Well,
and if not for injuries, it probably would have.
What year was
that, by the way? Do you remember which year was he caught the touch his rookie year?
Would it have been 2013?
13 or 14.
I want to say 13, but check it out, Brandon. Yeah. Man, that was fast. He hasn't done anything since then. I mean, his second year, I think he caught 10 passes.
He doesn't do anything.
He doesn't do anything.
Oh, the French. Doesn't do anything.
I saw an Orson Welles documentary, by the way.
Oh, really?
I was so excited when I saw it on there because I'm always checking the documentary list. What year was it?
Yeah, he had 1 touchdown in 2014, but 7 in 2013.
Okay, 7. And then what happened in 2015?
2015, he didn't play.
He didn't play at all.
He only had those 2 years, 16 games in 13, 7 in 14.
Yeah.
So he couldn't catch on this year.
And he was just a red zone terror.
Yep.
Damn.
Which means no pension either because he didn't play long enough.
I still wonder about breaking into media in New York.
No, but I get what
I understand.
Hank's
what I get it too. No,
look
to
like
be
Joey.
On, he does look a little bit like Marasso.
Kind of looks like Joey in this picture.
Yeah, there's a resemblance.
Except he's smiling.
on either coast, there's a gazillion media opportunities, of course. But I just depending on what he wants to do.
Sounds like he's doing a lot of new media stuff. And I think entertainment in the sports world probably fits best for Joe Fourier as opposed to, say, play-by-play or sideline.
Yeah.
You know.
And there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. He could be the next Michael Strahan.
Oh, boy.
I got to tell you, Mike Strahan on Good Morning America, I watch him like a hawk.
I do, too. I really
his,
do.
His ad-libs are so awful. Bad.
Awful.
Oh, are they bad? They just go flat.
I will admit, I get really excited when he's hosting The Big Board. Because you know there's going to be a fumbling question where he has to pick up the card and then look at the card and read it off the card.
Yeah, he
always
he flattens the room quite frequently with just a bad ad lib.
All right, here's another thing to pay attention to when you're watching Strahan on GMA. No matter what the joke is and how bad it is, the one-liner he throws out there, watch Robin Roberts' reaction because she will laugh at anything he says uproariously it's the funniest thing ever.
Well, I have to believe
all
that.
Courtesy.
I wonder if she wasn't instrumental in him getting that gig.
Probably. She just got inducted to the Sports Broadcaster Hall of Fame.
I saw that. Yeah, she's a Hall of Famer.
How long was she a sports broadcaster? I mean, I know she was on SportsCenter.
It's all about her being one of the first chicks.
And yeah, I guess.
She was credible. I thought she was good at what she did. I mean, certainly one of the best chicks I've seen in sports broadcasting, which maybe doesn't say that much. But, I mean, we're going to, let's just face it, we're going to see if they induct.
Oh, I don't care about if it's female or not. She didn't do anything for me. Maybe because the stories are always so uplifting when she actually does a story.
There's hardly a story on Good Morning America she does that isn't uplifting. She is like the queen of uplifting.
You know what I find hilarious too about that show? And it's one of those things, it's like, how did I never realize this before? And it's so minor whenever I never really watched it that much because we were always on at that time.
Right.
But they do from like 20 minutes in, like 7:20 to 7:30. They don't do anything. It's all commercials. And then the local stuff.
From
7:20 to 7:30.
Oh, yeah. I know.
It's like, so I just picture those guys just jerking each other off for those 10 minutes.
They do. They do. That's what they don't talk about it. But
the more you watch that show, the more you realize not much really goes into those morning shows. It's only 2 hours.
They, as far as the hosts, no, the hosts don't do that much.
They don't do anything.
The best things that happen on the shows are the correspondents bust their ass on a big story.
Yeah. And they're longer packages than, say, you know, at the evening news.
But those packages are usually really good. I mean, the people they
excellent,
have
yeah.
do pretty good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. Probably radio for like 4.
Oh, GMA, no, a lot of people watch those shows. They really do.
Are we doing 2 parts? Are we doing 1 part? What's the word?
Yeah, I guess we should wrap. Should we wrap part 1?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do the wrap. Yeah. We'll see you in part 2.
See you. Bye.